So like anything else, practice makes perfect. It's so important that a person who wants to utilize relaxation exercises and really benefit from them must practice them during the day at a time when they are not feeling particularly anxious.
Hello, welcome to the Sleep to Healthy. I'm your instructor, Dennis Trumpy, and this is lesson number 8, titled Relax or Suffer. In the last lesson, titled Sleep Myths, Unlearning Sleep, we learned about sleep myths and how many of the beliefs you have about sleep are simply not true. You learned how to counter media sleep myths and how to challenge your own personal beliefs about sleep, learning to turn a weakness into a strength. In this lesson, we're going to learn how relaxation is critical to sleep. In fact, relaxation is the gateway to sleep. You simply cannot sleep without being relaxed. The brain won't let you do it. You may be reluctant to embrace relaxation techniques, thinking they're too new agey or touchy-feely. But I'm going to show you how the relaxation response is grounded in hard science. It's not an elective part of CBTI, but a mandatory part of the core curriculum. Stress is the number one sleep killer, so we need to get your stress levels down so sleep can come naturally and easily. If you don't learn to control your stress, well, then you can kiss your goal of sleeping well goodbye. If you have not listened to previous lessons, fear not, because you will still benefit from listening to this episode. If you look at all the CBTI or Cognitive Behavioral Therapy for Insomnia elements that this course is based on, you will see that all deal directly or indirectly with reducing your levels of stress, especially around bedtime. There are basically two ways to deal with stress: prevention and temporary repair. As with most things in life, prevention is preferred over a temporary repair. It's better to take a sliver out than it is to cover it with a bandage. It's better to have a bad tooth pulled than to take pain relievers every 4 hours. Better to stop smoking to prevent lung issues than it is to go on oxygen. In most cases, the repaired option is suboptimal to prevention. And the same goes with sleep and stress. If you can prevent stress from building up in the first place, you're better off over experiencing stress and then dealing with it through relaxation. Relaxation is not a cure, it's a band-aid solution. Sometimes all you have is bandages and no tweezers for your sliver, so bandages are the best option. If you have tweezers, use them. In the first place, the relaxed state may never feel as good as it would feel if you never experienced the stress in the first place. In the second place, you have suffered through the stressful thoughts and event, sometimes needlessly and oftentimes repeatedly, many times per day and often for many days or even months or years. This lesson is all about repairing your mind from the damage of high stress. It's about getting your stress response tuned down to a point where you can relax and fall asleep. The last lesson on sleep myths, that was all about prevention. It was about how to avoid having stress build up in the first place. By reframing stressful situations, taking them from less helpful and less true perspectives to more helpful and truer perspectives, you stop the stress from building up in the first place. This is always the preferred option. As an example, suppose you've had several nights of poor sleep and as a result feel sleepy, irritable, foggy-brained during the day. You keep ruminating over and over how this event is ruining your life. You feel the stress all day long and it's interfering with your sleep. You have two choices: the temporary repair or prevention. Let's start with the temporary repair. You go into temporary repair mode when you do some relaxation exercises each evening to trigger the relaxation response. your stress level goes from an 8 down to a 5. This helps somewhat, but each night you don't sleep well. The same stressful thoughts well up. You suffer during the day due to the stress, and you have to spend time each evening going through relaxation exercises to calm your mind. The problem is that the root cause, your unhelpful, inaccurate thoughts, are never dealt with, so you must repair the damage night after night. The alternative is prevention. In this case, you pull out your CBT worksheet that you were given in the last lesson, and you work through your thoughts and actions that are causing the stress. You reframe the experience from one that appears to ruin your life to a more modest and honest assessment of an inconvenience, not a disaster. As a result, your stress melts away. Each time you notice yourself having the old thoughts, you catch yourself and replace them with the new beliefs. Over time, you don't even think about the old thoughts anymore. The stress is gone, and even after a few nights of bad sleeps, you're likely to start sleeping well again because you just don't worry about it. But I know from experience that this is easier said than done. I've been practicing CBT for many years, and yet some stresses are just hard to break. For me, having a boss I disagree with on key issues seems to be an unshakable stress. I can write it out and reframe it, but every time I think of my boss, my blood boils. Sometimes the brain just doesn't like following a formula. It has a mind of its own. Today's lesson are for those stressors that you seem to have trouble controlling. It's comforting to know that even for those uncontrollable stressors, there's a bandage to help relieve the pain. I should mention here that I don't mean to minimize the difficulty that it is for those who have experienced extreme trauma or who have mental illnesses to change their thoughts. That is a different beast that I can't cover adequately in this course. I'm talking about the automatic negative thoughts or ANTs that arise from life's disturbances. Most unhelpful thoughts by most people can be altered over time. That is what CBT, or Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, does so well. For those stresses that are left over, relaxation techniques is what we will cover in this lesson, and they can be your savior. Last lesson, we talked about the paradox of improving your sleep. We can get stuck in a catch-22 because
in order to sleep better, you need to pay attention to sleep.
But the more you pay attention to sleep, the more it causes stress, and the more it stops you from sleeping well.
You resolve that paradox by choosing to focus on how you are feeling and functioning, not on your sleep. You don't worry about how many hours of sleep you had. You only worry about how you're feeling and functioning and respond accordingly. This lesson on relaxation fits right into that model. Don't follow my advice on relaxation with the goal of sleeping well. Follow my advice because it's going to make you feel and function better regardless of your sleep quality. Relaxation has a long history in science showing that it can help your relationships, improve your overall health, improve your memory, improve your decision-making abilities, and improve your sense of well-being. That's plenty enough reason to learn how to relax, so don't throw sleep into the mix. It isn't needed, and it will counteract the benefits of relaxation. From the standpoint of a species surviving, sleep is a bizarre phenomena. To survive, we need to be aware of our environment, reacting to dangers, ready to fight or flight at a moment's notice. The great sleep scientist, Alan Rickshoffen, put it well. If sleep doesn't serve some vital function, it is the biggest mistake evolution ever made. Nature knows how vulnerable we are when sleeping, so nature doesn't want us to sleep while dangers are at hand. Stress is a reaction to a perceived danger. In our tribal days, dangers were physical, a poisonous snake, a lion, an enemy tribe. When danger presented itself, we fought or we fled. Then the danger was over, and we could return back to a restful space. as long as no panthers were prowling outside our hut, we could sleep. You likely don't live in an environment where you're worried about bears breaking into your bedroom, but you have lots of other psychological stresses. You worry about money. Even if you have lots of money, you worry about it. You worry about your relationships with those you care about. Do they still like you? What did that look or tone of voice mean? Will they abandon you? Do they have a hidden agenda? How are people responding to my social media presence? You worry about your job. Is it secure? Do your coworkers like you? And do they think you're competent? Where is your career heading? Or will you get promoted? Are your contributions being appreciated? You worry about your health. How long will you live? What does that new feeling or lump mean? Am I vulnerable to the many illnesses and diseases highlighted in the media? You worry about your world. Are the things you value under attack by society? What about pollution's effect on my health and the well-being of the planet? Where are your political leaders leading you? The list, it goes on and on. These are not physical threats that we can deal with quickly and then relax, as mentioned in Lesson 1. Although we have evolved immensely in society in many ways, culturally, technically, spiritually, our basic DNA is the same as it was 80,000 years ago, and in most meaningful ways, millions of years ago. Our world has changed, but we're still hairless apes, bewildered, and in many ways, ill-prepared for our highly sophisticated technical world. In addition to causing insomnia, living a life of stress causes many other health problems. Many of these are hidden time bombs and will not show themselves for many years. You could look on your insomnia as a blessing, like a dove in the underground mine that warns the miners of an impending doom. If we suffer from insomnia, it's a pretty good sign that we don't have our stress under control. So be thankful that you have noticed that you have insomnia and you're prepared to do something about it. I would like you to learn about a very helpful concept with regard to relaxation and sleep. Back in Lesson 2 on sleep, we learned about the sleep stages. The deepest sleep stage is called N3. It is when your brain is at its quietest. Your brain waves are very slow. You're oblivious to the world around you in a deep, restorative sleep. So, imagine a horizontal yard or meter stick out in front of you. And at the zero point on the left side of the stick is this N3 or deep sleep, the quietest your brain can be in its natural state. Now, way over on the far right end of the stick is the opposite. That's your brain in flight or fight response or hyperarousal. This is what it would be like if you were being chased by a bear or confronted by an armed robbery. Your breathing would be rapid and shallow. Your heart would be racing. Your brain would be lit up, firing on all cylinders. Let's call this a level 10. Deep sleep, level 0 on the left. Flight or fight is 10 on the right. Now, between these two extremes, there's a continuum. For instance, 8 might be what I would call the red flag stage, where there's no obvious danger to life, but you've noticed something potentially threatening, such as a strange noise in your home at night. Next down the rule is a 6, which would be highly alert, but no danger. This might be like working on something important to you, such as completing a work assignment with important consequences. This is the level where you might reside most of the day. Endless items on your to-do list, assignments to complete, commitments to realize, relationships to maintain. You are in high alert, ready for anything. Now, let's go down the scale to a 4, which is a calm, relaxed state, such as being at the beach or relaxing, listening to music. You're aware of your surroundings in the moment, but your danger system is not activated. Next, a level 3. This is where you are just drifting off to sleep, and this is called N1 sleep. You feel safe enough and your mind is calm enough that your brain can begin to shut down the external world and focus inward, ignoring the environment. This is described in greater detail in Lesson 2. Next down the ruler, at level 1, is N2 sleep. You are shut off from the world, allowing your brain to do what it does when it sleeps. And finally, far left, N3 level 0, the most relaxed, inward focused you can be. Now, when moving from the higher stages, such as level 6, where you're trying to keep your head above water, down to level 3, which is N1, the entryway into sleep, you cannot just skip over stages. You must go down one stage at a time, and your brain needs time to adjust to each new stage. You simply cannot jump from a 6 of high alertness down to a 3 of N1 sleep. That is why it's critical for you to be at the relaxed stage, 4, for about an hour before bedtime. Problem solving, planning, dealing with relationship issues, these are all stage 6 or higher. You cannot go from a stage 6 to a stage 3, which is the onset of sleep, directly. You must go through stage 4, which is the feeling of relaxation. One of your problems might be that you are trying to jump the queue and go from a level 6 down to a level 3 too quickly. Quit trying to do it. It doesn't work. Give your brain the room it needs to move slowly down the measuring stick from level 6 to relaxed at level 4 so it can enter to N1 at level 3. This lesson will help to teach you how to effectively and efficiently reduce your stress level so you can cross over into lullaby land. There are two ways you might experience sleep stress. The first is you may have trouble turning your brain off after a day of running full tilt at a level 6. The second is that you may find that even if you're relaxed, you suddenly jump to a level 6 or 8 or perhaps even a 10 when it comes time to sleep. This is sleep anxiety. Either way, this lesson will help you. This lesson, we have a new guest, Dr. Stephanie Silberman. Dr. Silberman is the author of The Insomnia Workbook, a comprehensive guide to getting the sleep you need. Dr. Silberman is a clinical psychologist and a board-certified sleep medicine specialist. She's a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, but also a working mother, wife, and community activist. I interviewed Dr. Silberman some time ago, and we will hear some excerpts from that interview during this lesson. A link to the full interview is on the sleeptohealthy.com website. So this is Dr. Silberman on the two types of stress.
I just always tell people that you cannot be anxious and relaxed at the same time. Most people who complain to me that they have trouble sleeping are experiencing some level of anxiety. Now, some people have anxiety that's throughout the day and may be caused by various factors, and other people do not. Other people only have anxiety about sleep. This has been a problem for them. It's being maintained by the different behaviors that they have during the day and that they're maintaining. They get into bed and suddenly that anxiety comes in. They're saying, how many hours am I going to get tonight? Uh-oh, I'm looking, you know, at the clock every 5 minutes. I'm getting more and more frustrated. That's why it's so important for a person to practice relaxation exercises, deep breathing, meditation, doing scripted exercises, and make sure that they find ways to relax before getting into bed.
Your body and mind's response to stress is called the stress response, sometimes called the flight or fight response. The flight or fight term is because your body and mind prepare to either flee from a danger or stick around and do battle with the threat. When your fight or flight response kicks in, your body and mind respond in several ways. Stress hormones such as adrenaline are released. Heart rate, blood pressure, breathing all increase. Senses such as hearing, vision, touch become more sensitive. Blood flow to the stomach and extremities decreases, while flow to the brain and the vital organs increases. Muscle tone increases, sweating begins, and blood sugar levels increase. Our brain goes on high alert. Anything that causes the brain to respond with the stress response will be programmed in, and the brain will become more and more sensitive to the same trigger. You might recognize a number of these responses are tied to chronic illnesses connected to stress, such as stomach ulcers, high blood pressure, cardiovascular diseases, and diabetes. Our bodies are designed for an occasional flight or fight response, not continual stress, which you might be experiencing. The good news is there are effective ways to control our stress response. The most scientific approach was developed by Dr. Herbert Benson called the relaxation response. There is even a book devoted to this by Dr. Benson, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes at sleeptohealthy.com. Here's what you need to know. It had been observed that many religions and cultures had practices that helped members of society control their mind and body and reduce stress. By studying ancient religions and cultures and combining this with scientific measures and controls, Dr. Benson was able to whittle down millennia of wisdom and practices into a few essential elements to reverse the stress response. These elements are 1. A quiet place with eyes closed to minimize distractions. 2. A comfortable position and muscular relaxation. 3. A mental focusing device such as breathing, a word, or an image to shift the mind away from distracting thoughts. And finally, 4. A passive disregard of everyday thoughts. These are the essential elements for a session of calming meditation. Before we get into the details of this, it is helpful to let you know that there are many resources in many formats that can help you learn this technique. I use an app called Headspace, as they have a series of meditations specifically for anxiety that I've found to be very good. There's also an app called Calm. These are both paid apps, but there are also free meditation apps. There are podcasts now that have meditation for sleeping. There are audiobooks, and you can probably find classes at a nearby community college. In addition, most religions have meditations designed to calm and bring inner peace. I want you to know that there are many options because meditation is a very personal experience. You may benefit from the practice we will describe here, but if this doesn't work for you, explore, and you will find something that suits your tastes, beliefs, and budget. I'm going to focus on the relaxation response because it gets meditation down to its most basic form, and it shouldn't conflict with your belief system. Also, if you explore other techniques, you will be able to make sure that they include these basic elements. There are lots of different methods out there, and not all are designed to produce calmness. One thing to watch for with meditation is that it doesn't induce stress. This sounds counterintuitive, but since your mind is quiet and not being distracted, it will want to drift towards stressful thoughts and problems that you are dealing with. Minds are wired in many different ways, and we have different past experiences and understanding of how the world works. Different forms of relaxation will work to different degrees for different people. So do some experimenting and find resources that work best for you, and especially be mindful that your chosen method induces relaxation, not stress. If you're trying to meditate by yourself, unaided, and you find that it's just creating stress, then consider a guided meditation where you listen to someone guiding the meditation. For me, I tend to drift towards stressful thoughts when I try to meditate by myself, so I like a semi-guided meditation where a guide interrupts from time to time to get me back on track. Here is what Dr. Silberman has to say.
It's funny because I, out of all the relaxation exercises that I recommend, the progressive muscle one is actually my least favorite. That's just a personal kind of thing. I don't like the tensing up of the muscles first and then relaxing them. So I prefer one that I have in my book and that I give to my patients as an audio, which is just relaxing as much as you can and very focused on the breathing.
I'm not going to do a meditation in the podcast, as finding the right meditation is too personalized, and I'm unlikely to have the one that works best for you. Instead, head to my website at sleepthehealthy.com, and I'll have some links to several different relaxation resources. As an example of how relaxation is a very personal choice, here is Michael Schwartz's take on relaxation.
And then a second technique for purposeful relaxation is something called progressive muscle contractions. And this is sometimes referred to as the Jacobson technique. And this was developed by a psychiatrist back in the 1800s, I believe, who was working with patients and needed them to relax so he could help them with talk therapy, psychotherapy. And he found a simple technique really helped, and that was having them lie down and in his office on a cot or something like that. And he would have them go through their body slowly, sequentially contracting and holding different muscle groups. And it might take 3, 4, 5 minutes. And he found that his clients were much more relaxed at the end of this technique, and he was able to then converse with them and help them with their problems. So progressive muscle contractions is very simply that. It's going through your body slow and steady, contract and hold, and then relax one muscle group after the next. I like to encourage my clients to repeat each muscle contraction. So they do, maybe start with hand squeezes, kind of 5 seconds on, 5 seconds off, and then repeat it. Kind of slowly, steadily just working their way through their body. And any muscle that's not comfortable, like for example, when I do this, my calf muscles can cramp real easily. So I kind of just bypass those. So it shouldn't feel uncomfortable. If it does, for that matter, the breathing technique or the muscle contractions, if anything's uncomfortable, you should stop what you're doing and take care of yourself.
Please contact me with any resources you know of that you have found helpful so I can add them to the list. Using the technique of the relaxation response, Dr. Benson was able to identify physiological changes such as slower brainwave activity and mental quieting, reduced secretion of stress hormones, reductions in heart and breathing rates, and in some cases blood pressure, increased blood flow to the extremities, and relaxed muscles throughout the body. Over the years, the relaxation response has been shown to improve many health problems related to stress that we mentioned earlier. In addition, many scientific studies have shown that the relaxation response is an effective treatment for insomnia. It's a great life skill to learn and practice. My hope is that our schools will eventually have meditation taught as a core life skill. The relaxation response can be practiced any time and even several times a day. Morning practice helps set a positive tone for the day. Midday practice helps reduce stress as it builds up. Evening practice helps reduce stress before bed. And practicing in the middle of the night, if you can't stay asleep and you're out of bed, gives you something that is both calming and beneficial to do. Meditating in the middle of the night is often my go-to method for getting back to sleep. I do my meditating lying quietly in bed. Then I have a win-win situation. If I fall asleep during the meditation, then that's great because I want to fall asleep. If I'm still awake at the end of the meditation, then that's great too because I've had a full meditation session. Many relaxation responses are also helpful. These are times when you take a moment to become aware of your situation and relax. We can do one right now. Don't do this if you require intense concentration right now, although you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast if that's the case anyway. First, just become aware of your body. Close your eyes if you're able to, but it's not necessary. Take a deep breath over the count of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold it for a count of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. Release the breath over a count of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. And wait a count of four before breathing again. 1, 2, 3, 4. I call this the 4-4-4 or 4x4. This 4-4-4 or 4x4 technique is great any time to do a quick de-stressor. Let's do three sets together. Take a deep breath over the count of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold it for a count of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. Release the breath over a count of four. 1, 2, 3, 4. And wait a count of four before breathing again. 1, 2, 3, 4. Take a deep breath over the count of four. 4. Hold it for a count of four. 3, 4. Release the breath over a count of four. 4. And wait a count of four before breathing again. 1. Take a deep breath over the count of 4. 4. 1. Hold it for a count of 4. 3. 4. 1. Release the breath over a count of 4. 4. And wait a count of 4 before breathing again. 4. You can do as many as you have time for. Feel your body's response to the 4x4. If you feel a sense of relief or de-stressing, then you needed it. You might also notice that you're able to focus more sharply afterwards. I find it helpful when driving on the highway. Meditation is not meant to put you to sleep. It is meant to sharpen your awareness of your current situation. Now, sense the muscles in your face, in your neck, in your shoulders, and in your gut. Also check your tongue. It should be resting at the bottom of your mouth, not pressed up to the roof. It's good to learn where you hold your tenseness. If you feel tenderness, relieve the tension by either stretching the muscle or just allowing it to relax. This whole relaxation drill can be done in less than a minute, but the longer the better. You can practice the 4x4 before doing your regular relaxation response routine as a warm-up. The trick with the mini-stressors is to do them several times a day. A great way to make sure they happen is to tie them to any action you take during the day on a routine basis. For instance, every time you drink some coffee or go to the washroom. Maybe each time the bus or subway stops. Or when you get up from or sit down in your chair. Or when you go to the water cooler. And so on. Just pick one or two activities that you do regularly during the day and match them up with a 4x4. At the beginning, put a sticky note to remind you. But after it becomes a habit, you can do away with the sticky note. Now let's go over how to do a full relaxation response. It takes about 15 or 20 minutes to get the full benefit, but any amount of time is better than none. So it's better to fit in a 5-minute session than it is to do nothing because you don't have 15 or 20 minutes to spare. Also, with practice, you can take less time if you want, as the relaxation response will kick in earlier each time. But don't make efficiency the objective, make quality the objective. At the end, you should feel relaxed, focused and energized. Again, don't do this exercise if you require focused attention or if you think it might put you at risk of falling asleep when sleep is not appropriate. You be the judge. Okay, so first, find a good location where you are unlikely to be disturbed. There should be minimal distracting noises, although some background noise can be helpful. You will likely find it helpful to get a timer with a gentle alarm so you don't have to worry about watching the time. Then, get into a comfortable position. This should not be lying down unless falling asleep, such as in the middle of the night, as I described earlier. It can be sitting in a comfortable chair or sitting on a cushion on the floor. Close your eyes to focus inwardly if appropriate and minimize distractions. If you can't close your eyes, that's okay too. Take a few of the 4-4-4-4s. Put your hand on your belly. You should feel it move up and down or in and out. If you don't, then you're breathing with your chest, not your diaphragm. You want to be breathing with your diaphragm or your belly. Change your breathing so that when you breathe in deeply, your belly moves in and out when you exhale. This may take some practice to get used to, but it's important. First, focus on the environment around you with your senses other than your eyes. Note what you can hear, feel, smell, and taste. Use your mind's eye to scan the area around you, seeing what you can remember about your space. Be aware of what you feel through your skin, the pressure of parts of your body that are touching surfaces, and any itchiness or pains. Don't worry about any pain or unpleasant sensations. Just notice them and move on. Next, do an internal body scan, starting at the top of your head and working down, or starting at your toes and working up. Either way works fine. Use your mind's eye to scan the inside of each major part of the body from one end to the other. Don't worry about what this should feel like or be like or how quickly or slowly you should go. Just do what feels right. There's no right or wrong way, just your way. It should not feel stressful. Don't worry about anything unpleasant that you notice. Just note it and move on. As you scan your internal body, note any areas of tenseness or pain or any other sensations. Just note it and move on. If you have an area of tenseness, you could pause for a moment and try to relax that area. Now, focus on your breath, but not your breath in general. Pick a particular part of your breath that seems to be most noticeable. It might be the transition between inhaling and exhaling, or it might be the sensation in your nose as you inhale, or it might be the sound of the air rushing out. You don't need to control your breath, just breathe normally. You might find it helpful to put your hand on your belly and sense the rise and fall of your tummy. You might also find it helpful to count, counting 1 on the in-breath, 2 on the out-breath, and counting up to 10, and then starting all over again. Or pick another number to count up to, even just 2. Whatever works for you is what is right. During this time, you may experience monkey brain. This is when your mind will relentlessly wander off from the task at hand, which is to focus on the breath. Even though it can feel like you're failing because you're not staying focused, this is actually good news for a few reasons. First, it makes you aware of what your mind is doing. Most of us are on autopilot and so absorbed in our thoughts that we don't realize what our minds are doing. We don't observe it from a detached or third-person perspective. The relaxation response is an opportunity to get an airplane-type view of what's happening. If you're new to this, you will be shocked at what you see your mind is up to. Secondly, it gives you an opportunity to have some control. You do this by noticing what your mind is up to, what it has been distracted by, and then gently, very gently, returning it to the breath. Thirdly, it can raise your awareness of what is important to your mind. You can use a method called noting, where you note whether the distraction is a thought, such as supper plans or anxiousness about a purchase, or a sensation, such as a pain or itch or uncomfortableness. You could also note what category it falls into, such as work or relationship, or something that you have to remember to do. You could note the emotion attached to it, such as whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. You could label the emotions, such as frustration or impatience or joy. If you use noting, don't analyze the distraction. Just note it, give it a label, and return back to the breath. And fourthly, it gives you a chance to choose a different line of thought that is less distressing than you might be thinking or feeling at the time. Even under high stress, or perhaps especially when under high stress or anxiety, it's useful to take a deep breath and realizing that, at least at this moment, life is not as bad as it seems. You're alive and breathing and coping. Some call this centering. It is a gentle reminder that you're not what is happening around you, or that you are not fully defined by what you are thinking or feeling right now. For instance, you might be having an anxiety attack and reacting with panic and judging that you are a failure or overly sensitive. A deep breath and putting yourself in the place of the observer helps you realize that you're more than the panic or the judgment. You can treat your distractions like a child, and you are the patient and wise adult. Imagine walking with a toddler down a path. The toddler gets distracted by so many things. First, it's a flower in the grass. When you notice them off the path, you gently and patiently call them back to the path. Then they're distracted by a butterfly, and again they wander off the path. And again, amused by their young and prescient mind, you call them back to the path. You have infinite patience as you are old and in no hurry, and the child has infinite curiosity. Try to have the same approach with your mind's wandering. Don't be impatient or frustrated. Just observe, be amused, and gently nudge your mind back to your breath where you belong. The irony of meditation is that meditation is great, whether it goes well or not. It's like my uncle used to say about fishing. The fishing is always good, whether the fish are biting or not. That is the attitude to strive for. The days when you have the hardest time focusing and keeping the monkey at bay is the day when it was most important that you took the time to meditate. Even if it feels as if you've accomplished nothing, you have accomplished a lot. The days when you have great concentration, it's a time to be thankful and experience what it feels like to be at a lower stress level. The value is in the journey, not the goal. Also, the less you feel like doing relaxation response, the more you need it. At the end of the focusing on the breath, take a moment to ease yourself back into the world. Notice the environment around you and through your senses. Take a 4x4 or two, open your eyes, congratulate yourself for putting your needs at a high priority, and go get back to life. I would like to give a couple of tips for success. I read Dr. Benson's relaxation response book as a university student way back in the 70s when it first came out. I still vividly remember the awkwardness and weirdness of those first steps into the relaxation response. I've been doing this on and off for a very long time now. So here are my tips for success. First, in terms of setting goals for doing the relaxation response, when it comes to something like this that you probably have a bit of resistance to committing to, I'm a keen believer in setting very, very low goals and then exceed them. I would set the goal of just showing up. Your goal is to set a time and place where you're going to show up to do the relaxation response. That's it. When you show up, you can decide to do a mini relaxation response, like a 4x4, or a 5-minute meditation, or even to give yourself permission to walk back out and not feel guilty. In fact, I encourage you to walk out without doing anything at least once to prove to yourself that it's not a gimmick, that you can walk out and still feel fine about your choice. Afterwards, set another place and time, or you could commit to a regular place and time, perhaps at first every few days. What you will find is that if you show up, you will nearly always do something. And that something will bring about a positive experience. And that positive experience will lead you to wanting to repeat it, or perhaps even grow it. And before you notice it, you're achieving the goal that you never set. I've used this practice to great effect at things like going to the gym. The second is to consider using audio track, at least for the beginning. Even a chime that goes off every minute or so to remind you to get back on track if your mind has wandered off is helpful. If you're listening to an audio track in a situation where you might drift off to sleep, make sure it turns off automatically, either at the end of the audio track or after a set time like 30 minutes. Otherwise, as you drift in and out of sleep as naturally comes, it can wake you up again. If you have any tips that have worked for you, please share them with me by going to sleeptohealthy.com and leaving a message. I can share your wisdom with others. And here's some more advice from Michael Schwartz.
So there's one thing that everyone needs to be in order for sleep to have a chance of happening, and that is you have to be relaxed. And this is a big topic. Being relaxed is kind of the first step to falling asleep. It's a prerequisite. You can't be going full speed ahead and then expect to suddenly sleep every 24 hours. I mean, you could go full speed ahead for, 36 or 48 hours and then probably fall asleep immediately. But if you want a regular, consistent, circadian kind of sleep pattern, then you do have to find ways to get relaxed as your normal sleep time approaches. And when I'm working with a client who's come to me for guidance for their sleep, I talk about two types of relaxation. I talk about the physical side, and then I also talk about the mental side. So I look at both kind of in the same context. For physical relaxation, most people want to wind down and relax in the evening to get themselves ready to sleep. And there are some signs that can indicate you're not relaxed. Things like muscles feeling tense, or you feel exhausted, or your hands are kind of cool, or your breathing is a little bit shallow and maybe rapid. So these are signs that you're not physically relaxed. Mentally, it might involve things like your mind is just very active or worrisome. You have racing thoughts, or you're kind of anxious, and you just can't really settle yourself down very well. So an active, anxious mind can be a sign that you're not mentally calm, you're not mentally relaxed. Okay, so when I look at both of these, let's first talk about physical relaxation. Okay, so in the evening, most people want to wind down, relax physically. There's a couple tried and true techniques, and I'm just going to briefly describe them, and you can look them up. The first is abdominal breathing, which is also sometimes called diaphragmatic breathing or tummy breathing. This involves very simply breathing with your abdomen area instead of your upper chest. So when you breathe, you might notice how you breathe. And you might feel like, if you stand there and you take a breath, that you're kind of holding your stomach in a little bit, and you're kind of raising your shoulders, and you're breathing kind of more upper chest. That is not a way of breathing that humans are designed to use in long stretches of time. It's not a normal breath pattern. It's a way of breathing that moves air rapidly in and out of you, and it tends to activate something called your sympathetic nervous system. And most people have heard of your fight or flight response, and that's kind of what your sympathetic nervous system is. So it's not really a way of breathing that we're meant to be doing over long stretches of time. A more calm and relaxed way of breathing would be using your abdomen. So it almost feels like you're breathing deep into your stomach, but of course you're not. You're not putting air into your stomach, but by expanding your abdomen with each breath in, you are encouraging air, you're drawing air deeper into your lungs, and your stomach and abdominal area gets out of the way, and it looks like you're breathing with your stomach, but you're really not. And this type of breathing helps quiet down your sympathetic nervous system and generally make people feel kind of relaxed. So when I'm working with someone, I might suggest that they practice during the day a couple times, kind of get the hang of it, and maybe count out the breaths instead of doing it for a duration of time. So maybe do 15 or 20 abdominal breaths. And they should be slow and steady, feeling like they're pretty deep breaths. Again, each breath in involves abdomen kind of expanding out. So sometimes I might suggest they feel like they're letting their waistline go with every breath in, and pause slightly at the end of every breath in, and then again at the end of every breath out. The breath in, from everything I've read, should probably be through your nose. The breath out, it's kind of up to you, nose or mouth. And practicing this breathing technique in the afternoon can help reduce any kind of performance anxiety with doing this type of breathing in the evening. And it's also important to remind a client that this is not meant to put you to sleep because, of course, as I mentioned in an earlier podcast, nothing will put you to sleep. This is meant to get you relaxed. And relaxation is the first step for sleep. Again, it's that prerequisite idea. It's you have to get relaxed for sleep to have a chance, but getting relaxed doesn't put you to sleep. Breathing abdominally can be done anytime. You can do it in the evening, you can do it during the day. It's really a very healthy, natural way to breathe, and there really aren't any contraindications for most people. If you have any questions about that, always ask your doctor. Your doctor knows your health better than anyone else, and so always let them know what you're doing. One other one that I like to throw in is a hot soak. So whether it's a bath or hot tub or something like that, can be very relaxing. There's a big caveat, though, and that is that you don't want to raise your body temperature too close to bedtime because your body temperature does need to fall for sleep. And so if you spike it right before bed, then it can delay the onset of your sleep. It can make falling asleep more difficult. Also, of course, in the middle of the night, you don't want to do a hot soak of any kind. Again, because it takes a while for your core body temperature to fall back down to where it needs to be for sleep. So hot tub soaks and baths, they're great, but just earlier in the evening or even in the late afternoon, or I've even suggested to some clients who have significant trouble falling asleep that they might do a hot soak if they have time in the morning as kind of a way to start their day. So they're getting that morning light, they're getting up that consistent time like I've talked about, and then they're raising their core body temperature. They're kind of spiking their alertness. So that's just some simple suggestions that can help with physical relaxation. And again, you want to talk to your doctor if you have any questions or concerns about physical relaxation. There are a lot of videos on YouTube. Some, of course, are better than others that can describe these techniques. So those are some simple suggestions for winding down physically, becoming physically more relaxed, which is a requirement for sleep.
So that's it for lesson 8 on relaxation. Next lesson is the final lesson in the CBTI course on curing your insomnia and the last of the 5 elements of CBTI. I will be covering sleep tips. Don't sabotage your sleep. So far, we've been focusing on what you can do to improve your sleep. In the sleep tips lesson, we will focus on what not to do so as to avoid undermining your progress.
So today I want to talk about something that most anyone with insomnia has been told, and that is good sleep hygiene. Yay, sleep hygiene. The deal with sleep hygiene is that it's kind of like other types of hygiene, like dental hygiene, let's say. It can help keep problems from showing up in the first place. Like you brush your teeth to keep your gums healthy, your teeth healthy, and all that. But if you have a cavity in a tooth, you can brush all you want, and that cavity is not going to go away. It doesn't take care of a problem that has already started. It kind of helps keep the problem away in the first place. You got to think of sleep hygiene kind of in the same way. It's not going to fix your insomnia. If you have chronic insomnia, this is not a big answer to it. But it's what most people are told. If they have sleep trouble, they're told, you follow good sleep hygiene practices. And okay, that's great, but that's not going to make their insomnia go away.
This lesson, like others, comes with an assignment. You can find the assignments at sleeptohealthy.com. Your assignment for this lesson is to find a relaxation technique and start using it. Let me know what's working well for you so I can pass it on to others. I have links to several relaxation resources at sleeptohealthy.com to give you a head start. All the instructions are at my sleeptohealthy.com website. Go there and work the plan. It's as simple as that. Well, that's it for lesson 8. If you've been benefiting from these lessons, the best thing you can do to return the favor is to tell others about this course on curing insomnia. Do it by word of mouth, email, social media, whatever you're most comfortable with. And now my disclaimer, spoken in one breath. I hope it's obvious, but this podcast is not a substitute for advice from a qualified healthcare professional. The sole purpose of this podcast is to educate and entertain. As we do not know your particulars, we cannot possibly provide professional or medical advice. Your use of the information in this podcast is at your own risk. You don't need tons of sleep trivia and people's opinions about sleep. You just need to know proven instructions on what you can do today to sleep better tonight so you can feel and function better tomorrow. This also allows you to repeat lessons, as it's hard to absorb all the information the first time through, and the information will make more sense after you've had the context of the whole course. And that's about it. Thanks for joining me in my sleep class. I look forward to seeing you again on the next episode of the Sleep to Healthy podcast. See you then.